live from the heart of Los Angeles. This is the Pat Holmes edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look out the bright lights. Look out the bright lights. We'll be swimming when we die.
Host and author Sarah McCrum.
Look out the night sky. Look out the night sky where the stars
are musical guests
shine.
Hey, hey. Mark Stewart, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Bonfaggio.
I have had such an exciting time connecting and reconnecting and connecting some more with our guest and our musical guest. They are both in Australia, and it feels, it's never felt closer, and I just can't wait till we're all able to travel again. I've never been to Australia, but I know both our guests and our musical guests have been to America, and I feel like I have to get to know them in person because we are kindred spirits, to be sure, so much so that while I was reading Sarah McCrum's book, Love Money, Money Loves You, Money Talks, Are You Listening? I was so listening, not just to money, but to Sarah in my head as I was going through each of the chapters, and I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I love how she did that. Let me go on and see what else. And then the next chapter said, don't go on unless you have actually done the exercise. And I'm like, oh yeah, she's probably right. I know she's right. So, and she'll tell you it's not her that's right. This is money talking. So today we've got three guests, I guess, Sarah McCrum, Jay Yates, and money. So we'll get right to it when we come back here on the Life Changes Show right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate, but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety, but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like you see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, Beads.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with your host, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows on our archive page at LifeChangesShow.com, which include luminaries such as comedian Michael Collier, actress Gabriella Wright, performing artist James Hood, and author Ken Honda. Email your comments and questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. You can also comment via Twitter @LifeChangesShow and Facebook @TheLifeChangesShow.
Version of the Life Changes Show, or at home edition at the moment, and I am Filippo Voltaggio, host, online with Mark Leisure, our co-host and producer.
First, I think we have just a little bit of housekeeping, because I think Jay can set us straight when she comes on, but I'm pretty sure it's Australia, just for that.
But they both can set us straight.
That is true. They both can set us straight. I tell you what, this is a conversation. We talk a lot about love being the answer, and I think that love being the answer for money is a conversation that needs to happen. I'm so excited for tonight.
You know, and Mark, I'm glad you said that. Setting it straight is actually what tonight's show is about, because we're we've been thinking of money in a certain way, a lot of us, actually collectively, maybe all of us, or whether it's we've been taught or well, I don't know. We'll see what Sarah has to say and what money has to say on that, because we're going to set it straight right now. Our guest is a teacher, a coach, and an author, and so much more. She's the author of Love Money, Money Loves You, Sarah McCrum. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Filippo. It's really great to be here again.
Yes. Last time you were a musical guest in the form of a spoken word artist with Gary Malkin. And that was wonderful. And in a way, actually, let's start with that, because what you did there was very energetic and we could feel it. And that dovetails, it started with money and then that, but it's all the same thing in a way, isn't it?
It is. You're absolutely right. It really is all the same thing, because what I learned or what I discovered about money is that money is energy. And I'd trained for more than 20 years with Chinese masters, and Chinese masters are all about energy. So, and what I was doing on the show when I was on last time was this spoken word that was a transmission of energy, so that people actually feel different when they're listening to it, not just because the words are nice, but because there's energy kind of packaged in the words. And so they receive the energy directly. So it's absolutely all the same thing. Yes.
And people get what you are trying, or what you are imparting from your own energy flowing and Gary's music, et cetera, right? So your intentions.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I think Gary and I, when we started working together, he's playing the piano and I'm speaking, and it's improvised. So we don't know what's going to happen. But there was this kind of alchemy that happened where there's an instant transmission, and the music and words together open people up. And funnily enough, the very earliest recordings we made were all about money. So it was helping people to actually directly experience the energy of money, or money as energy, rather than money as cash, transactions, bank accounts, numbers, all the things we tend to think of it as, but to actually feel and get to know what it is that's behind all those, the hard side of money, if you like.
Well, improvise is a good word in a way that applies to our conversation today. When I said that we have three guests, so to speak, yes. Money was talking through you, and you wrote this book almost as a dictation, so much so that you couldn't put it out because you said, "This isn't me."
Well, it was a strange situation in a way. I was reading a little book about money, and it had questions at the end of the chapters, and one of the questions said, "What would money like to say to you?" And I started writing in my notebook, like you do when you're answering those questions, but my pen just took over, and I literally received a message. It said it was money talking to me, literally. Like, and it said, I'm an energy. And so I wrote this whole message about two pages, and it definitely wasn't me, because it was saying things that I would never have known to say about money. I didn't see it that way. So, and yes, the story about when I wrote it, like, I didn't realize it was going to be a book to begin with. I was just writing these messages from money because it was so extraordinary and fascinating. And then I figured out after a while, it's like, oh, most people would probably turn this into a book. Maybe I'd better do that. So I did it. I didn't have any money at the time. I had to learn how to do it a bit later. But because I didn't have money, I hadn't learned how to apply it yet. I actually felt quite ashamed in a way. I didn't feel qualified to publish the book with that message. It was a very beautiful message for humanity, really, without being a good example. And I'd also kind of been told by one of my Chinese masters that if you do something like that, like, some awful end is going to come to you. So I think I was actually really quite afraid if I published this book and then I wasn't a very good example yet, I'd come to an awful demise. So it was a very confusing time for a while.
Wow. And I take it you were just as surprised of what money was saying, not just coming from the fact that you didn't have much of it at the time, but It wasn't talking like one would expect. Well, like we've heard money talk, and money talks and BS walks and all the things we've heard about money. It doesn't grow on trees, and evidently it does.
The root of all evil. Well, yeah, it was definitely the message that came across was so beautiful. You know, it talked to me, and one of the things it said very clearly in that very first thing that I wrote was that I'm not the devil, and I never have been. Mm. It was an invitation to really use and play with money and do whatever I want with it and not to hold back, that money is truly available for all of us and that we're too afraid of it and we're too rigid about it, and that it's this energy that's here to connect us in our creativity. Really what I got was that it's here to connect our contributions together, which of course is actually what it does. And in the later, all the other things I wrote, I started writing every day these messages, just like over 60 messages from money. Over and over again, it was saying, you know, I want you to love me. And it was talking about how money itself, this energy, is an energy of love, and that it loves us. And this kind of generosity, the generosity of life, and the beauty that's possible when you have this kind of relationship with money, as it sunk into me what it was really talking about, that is what changed things for me.
So one of the things that's been happening is I've been having this conversation with several people on a different level, thanks to having begun reading the book and actually being about halfway through, is that I'm having it on a different level. I'm talking about things at a different level and I'm listening at a different level. And here's something that came up just recently. I was talking to somebody and she was talking about something without ever mentioning the price. And I've always thought about the price but the funny thing is it wasn't something I could afford at the moment. And so I questioned myself, why do I want to know the price? Because it's not something that's even in my, and I thought, oh, this is the game I've played with myself for years. It's like, look at that yacht. How much is it? Oh, it's $3 million more dollars than I have. And I'm self-sabotaging, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, it's actually a really good example, because that's what most of us do. We say, I'd really like that, but I can't have it because I don't have enough money. And there's such a simple thing that you can do instead of that, which is to say, I'd really love that. I can't have it right now because I don't have enough money. That's okay. But I'd really love it. And so you stay open to being able to have it in the future. And if you do that, it because you're more open, it actually creates a kind of energy field of attraction. It makes it much easier for things to happen. Whereas if you say, I can't, and you, it's like you just cut the desire, you cut the mechanism, if you like, or the flow of energy that enables things to happen in life. Like what money taught me over and over again in the book is that when we're connected with what we want, what our wishes are from the inside, you know, those heartfelt wishes, those are the easiest ones to fulfill. What's hard is when we get heady. It's like, oh, I shouldn't want that thing that's $3 million more than I have, or usually, you know, it's 3,000 or 30,000 more. It's not always the millions. It's much closer. I shouldn't want it because I don't have enough money. And we go into our head and we try to justify it and all of this. That's very difficult territory energetically. But if it's like, I would love that, and I'm just going to stay open to it, that's where we talk about flow. That's where wishes can be fulfilled much more easily. And that's really, I think, one of the core messages of the book.
And with the fact that I mentioned price, also comes something that you talk about in the book. The price isn't always the value, isn't always the, right?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things about the price. First of all, it's great if you want to know the price, because then it's kind of like a preparation. You're giving the instruction, in order to be able to have this thing, I'm going to need however much money it is. Okay. So avoiding looking at the price is avoiding reality, and it actually it gets in the way of that kind of wish fulfillment. But yeah, the very interesting thing that I learned around price is how it links with value. And a really simple way to look at it is, let's imagine that there's a course, for example. And that course, let's say it's a course about improving your health. So it could be appropriate for somebody who's a multimillionaire. It could be appropriate for somebody who's living on the street, doesn't have any money at all, and just about anyone in between. And we tend to think, oh, that course will have its price. But that's not actually true. If I wanted to sell that course to the people who don't have anything, maybe really need it, they're not going to pay anything for it. Even if they, like, there's just no way they can pay anything for it. So either I have to go to somewhere else, a government agency or a nonprofit or something, to pay for it for them, or I need to give it away. If I just try to sell that course to somebody who's running a really successful business, might be exactly the same content, for, you know, $50 or $150, it's going to immediately signal to them that it doesn't fit with the way that they value themselves. Mm-hmm. So the way we value ourselves, the way we value our product or our service, the way other people value it, all of those things play into the price, which is why it's really virtually impossible to work it out all on your own. Like, what's the price of my product? It's a very difficult thing to work out without some feedback.
Wow. Another thing that it's making me that I'm reminded of is I'm really liking the exercise, and I'm doing it. I've done many exercises this way, and I feel like I'm good at them. Gratitude and all of that, thankful for, and who do I love and what do I love, but what do I value? Wow.
Yeah. That's the important stuff. And let's look at this for a moment, because I think this is really important at a wider scale than just me personally. Something you and I talked about yesterday, Filippo, our culture values a tree when it's dead.
Right. Because
it can be turned into something. That's just how we don't even question that most of the time. We're beginning to question it because we know that cutting down forests is not a good thing for the planet, but that's what we value. We value a tree when it's dead. It doesn't have financial value while it's still living. And money is the way that we name our value and share our value. We make it exchangeable. So it's only when we actually have a system that allows us to value, for example, a living tree, or a healthy human being rather than a sick human being, or whatever it is that we deem to be really valuable, that we can have an economy that is based on what's really valuable. So this question about value is not just about what do I personally value for myself, you know, like I like this color or that color, or I like this kind of fabric for my clothes rather than another kind of fabric. But it actually goes right the way across to every decision we make that involves money and transactions and all of that. And of course, our entire economy.
Right. So that's something that I also, as I looked ahead, I saw what's coming as far as a new currency and a new way to think of things, which I really like. And yet in the moment, I can just hear the question, okay, so what does this have to do with me making more money right now?
Well,
everything I know, but
look, I think that one of the things that I learned from the book is that there is a change going on, which is obvious to us, but there is a change that's going on energetically as well. So in the past, it worked quite well for people to go and learn techniques, NLP and other techniques to make money. And they learned how to manipulate energy in order to make more money. And many very wealthy people are extremely good at doing that. They've learned abilities that for manipulation of energy that enable them to get more stuff. Mm. The thing is that there's a price to that, both in the manipulation of the energy, because that creates a forceful energy and that brings force back to you. And also in terms of the wider consequences of the financial decisions we make. And I think we're very aware of those. So I think the book heralded a shift towards a more values-based way of making money. So what that tells me, and really what it's encouraging all the way through, is that we contribute something that is really meaningful to us. And then in order to make money, rather than the old way, which is always thinking about, okay, I'll provide this product or this service and this person will pay me and that person will pay me and that person will pay me. If you can learn how to ask for what you want, which is what this is such an important message in the book, and receive it, you don't have to be so transactional in the way you make money. So, for example, you make lots of contribution by making this radio show, which probably doesn't, radio shows don't usually make money, or they make very little money. But there's lots of contribution there, lots of helping lots of people. You probably have no idea in the new currency how much credit is built up there. And what most people do is they never really ask for what they want. And so they give, but they don't receive. Now, that doesn't mean we don't do business. Like, this might sound a bit strange, but this is really how it works. We still do business. We still, you know, provide services and things. But if you can get this message that you can ask for what you want and that you can discover how to receive what you want, and that the other part of the formula, so to speak, is that you contribute, you do good in the world, that's a recipe for a very fulfilling life.
It's interesting because I think
and you will make money.
Towards the end of the show, we're going to talk about people that end up in the grave, that end up with only the clothes that they have in the casket. It's we can't take it with us. And so what I'm sensing here is, yes, one can make money, and at the same time, if one isn't fulfilled, then that's not what the book is about. Because if you can't be fulfilled while you're making money, then no amount of money will fulfill us.
That's right. Of course, we need money. You know, we need money in order to fill our stomachs and fulfill the basics of life. But what the book does is show us a way to do that without having to work for money alone, do jobs that we hate. And look, it can sound a bit pie in the sky, but I've worked with people who are really, really on the edge financially. And it takes time, you know, it's a real shift in our consciousness, but people don't lose as they're learning, they gain as they're learning. It's not always that they get overnight, like suddenly, oh my goodness, I'm suddenly making a fortune. It's not that, because when we change our consciousness, it takes time. But steadily, over usually for people a couple of years or so, their life changes, the way they make money changes, their financial security and stability changes, and it gets better. And then they're building on a solid foundation of doing something that is meaningful to them and making money, and then learning how to make more money and contribute more. That's good.
Well, we won't talk about this now, and I feel like we're going to be talking about it someday in the very near future, but you have put this all into work, all to work, and it has worked for you, and now you're using it. Not only have you been using it to help people do it for themselves, but you're building, you have built something that is doing this with people and for people in a very, very big way. So you're a living example of the living book, the living conversation, which I'd love to have you back on at some point and talk about that. In the meantime, there are some things that people could get started doing, and we've touched on them already. But what would you say is the first? I know you say it in the book, but what do you say is the very first thing that we need to do in order to start tuning into being able to have a better relationship with money?
Relax. Simple. Relax. I teach everybody how to relax. Everybody learns to relax about money. When you relax about money, it's much easier to receive money. It's really interesting. You become more open-minded. You become more easygoing about it. When you stop worrying about it, you stop putting so many brakes on your financial situation. Absolutely, the first thing is to relax. And if you want to add another thing, it's to enjoy. The book goes on and on about enjoyment and how important it is in our relationship with money. And I just look at people all over the world and how few of them really put enjoyment in the center of their work and their money-making activities, or even their life, probably.
Do you know what threw me for a loop? Not because I don't have conversations like this. I just didn't expect it in this book. Like, money, love money, money loves you. Guardian angels.
Oh, yes, it was quite surprising for me, actually, at that time, less so now. Well, let's put it in this context. This is how I normally teach this kind of stuff. Actually, there I was having a conversation with money. Money is not an angel, but it was talking to me like an angel might.
And there it's is a not chapter, the devil, right? So
there's a chapter in the book that talks about guardian angels. And you can use a different word. You don't have to use that expression. It's just the way it came, the way money spoke about it at that time. But everybody who I've introduced to this work has had the experience increasingly of feeling guided, of feeling that there's something that is supporting them literally in their decisions, in their business, and also in their life. And that when they cultivate that relationship, it provides a great deal of peace, relief, a sense of direction in those times when you really don't know where you're going. And there's a moment in the book where it says that you'll have many times in the coming years where you're literally putting one foot in front of the other and you can't see any further than that. And I've experienced that, and I think we're going to experience it more, not less, for a while. Mm. Because we don't have all the answers, so we have to keep moving forward. If you have a sense of a guardian angel or a higher self or something that can just help you when it feels almost as though your eyes are closed, you're blind, and you have to keep moving forward, that is such a comfort and actually is such a source of wisdom and help in decision making. I think it's a very important part of how we operate as human beings. And we can either deny it or we can simply accept that there's way more in the world than we can see with our eyes and mm-hmm. and enjoy that relationship. Mm.
Well, one of the things when we come back, I'd like to, if you could touch on a way that we make problems for money, in the sense that the way we talk to money or think about money and talk about money, how we're making a problem for money because money gives us what we're asking for, and we're stuck in a cycle that we're not understanding. We're the ones that are creating that. So if we could touch on that when we come back. And as before we end our portion of our show together, how funny is money? So when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Sarah McCrum, a teacher, coach, and author of Love Money, Money Loves You. Her website is Sarah McCrum. That's MCCURM.com. And Sarah, I did that again. I did it last time too. And Sarah's with an H. And so McCrum is MCCRUM.com. And you're still doing both the podcast, The Spirit of Business, and The Money Scorecard?
The Money Scorecard is not a podcast. It's an actual scorecard. It's where you can score your relationship with money. It's on moneyscorecard.app. And The Spirit of Business is a podcast, yes.
Oh, okay. And we have links to all of that on our webpage for Sarah McCrum with a MCCRUM. When we come back, we We'll talk a little bit more with Sarah, and then with Dorothy, we'll have our Ask Dorothy segment, and then our musical guest, Jay Yates, all on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA, with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online at lifechangeshow.com, via Twitter Life Changes Show, and Facebook at Life Changes Show.
Well, I am Filippo. Love Money, Money Loves You is the book we're talking about, and we've titled the show Money Loves You, So Love Money Back. Our guest is Sarah McCrum, and we've been speaking about some very interesting things, and what I wanted to know, Sarah, is we are causing money some consternation.
Yes. It apologizes at one point. It says, I know you have a lot of advice about money already, but really it's not that great. So we've got to come along and put you straight. I play a game sometimes when I'm with a group of people. We call it the Money God game. And one person has to talk about what they want, and everyone else is the kind of collective god of money. And they have to decide what they're able to grant based on what the person is asking for. And it's amazing when you listen to people, because they're so unclear most of the time that what they're actually asking for is not what they want. So a really simple, silly example is somebody says, oh, I'd really like more money. And so the money god comes back and says, well, would half a cent do it be okay for you? Or maybe a dollar? And they say, no, I want much more than that. They say, okay, well, you know, maybe how about $100? But the point is that when we say things like, I want to make more money, there's no instruction in that. There's no clarity. There's no real request. It's just a kind of vague expression of dissatisfaction normally. And what happens then is that money has to supply you with some dissatisfaction. Or another really classic one is we sit there and we say things like, oh my goodness, I've got so many bills. I've got so many bills. And we don't realize that what we think and what we say is like an instruction to this energy called money. So money's sitting there listening. She said, I've got so many bills. I've got so many bills. So it says, oh, well, we have to deliver you so many bills. So they deliver you more bills because it's like that's what you're asking for, because you're focusing on it. You're paying attention to it and giving energy to so many bills. And money doesn't like that very much. I mean, money's always very nice and kind and loving, so it doesn't go too much down the not liking it. But, you know, it's like, it delivers all these bills and then you see as a very unhappy human being like, oh my God, now I can't afford, I don't even want to look at my bills because I've got so many. And it's not a recipe for happiness and satisfaction. And the energy flows in the universe through this kind of happiness and fulfillment and satisfaction. There's a really kind of sweet exchange that happens there. So we need to be a little bit aware what we're thinking and saying, realizing that they're almost like commands into consciousness or into this energy field of money, and they do get heard and responded to. So it's far better if you've got too many bills to what I did when I was learning this. I don't have to do it these days so much, but I would say to money, please pay this bill, and then the money would come and I'd be able to pay it. Whereas if I concentrated on the bills, I would just get more of them.
And so what we say, and also what we're feeling, what we're intending, well, what we're intending, but definitely what we're feeling, right?
Yes. Yeah. What we're feeling, because if your feelings contradict, you can say, oh, I really want to go on holiday here. But your feeling is, oh, I'm so depressed because I'm never going to be able to do that because I'm never going to have enough money. That feeling kind of conditions the request. It's rather like, it's kind of like it just takes almost all the power out of it. So you're very, very unlikely to get what you want if you have that kind of feeling.
And so to not have that feeling as much takes us back to what you said about it's simple, really relax.
Yeah, relax and joy. And just realize, like, I know that it's hard, especially if you're short of money. It's really hard. I know what I'm talking about doesn't appear easy. But actually, you know what? Even if you're short of money, you can still enjoy things and you can still relax. Worrying doesn't bring you money. It never did, and it's never going to. So, you know, let go of the stress and the worry because they're not helping. Relaxing and enjoying, the worst case scenario is you feel better. The best case scenario is that actually you make more money as well, which is what tends to happen.
Hmm. So you say money has humor?
It was very funny when it wrote the book. I thought it, I when I wrote the chapters, I would read them to my husband later. And I just laughed out loud sometimes. It's hard to remember an exact example, but sometimes it's so kind of, it's like it's looking at human beings a little bit quizzically, like, what on earth do you think you're doing? You know, that's never going to work. And it's lighthearted, and it's never mean or anything. It's just like slightly poking fun at us. Because we're so silly sometimes.
Sometimes.
Exactly.
Well, is there anything different that, well, we only have a couple more minutes, and if there is, I don't know if you can fill it in for now, but is there anything that money has said since the book has come out? Like, I'm pretty proud of our book or something, or... Maybe not
about the book, no. I do sometimes write new messages from money. I could do it any time, and I have done it sometimes for specific audiences, yeah.
So there may be more, or it may be just coming through the work that you are doing with your coaching. You're still doing workshops online, right?
And yes, I teach all the time, and in a way, money's always... kind of always has a presence there in everything that I teach. And sometimes I'll sit down and just write a message for a specific purpose for a blog. I could write a message for the audience of the Life Changes show. It would be quite specific. Easy to do that kind of thing. Wow. Once you've got a conversation going, it's like having a chat with you, really.
Wow. Oh, money's got a lovely voice and such lovely energy, like I'm feeling from you.
Money has a beautiful energy. It's like just exquisitely beautiful energy. Yes.
That's interesting. That just brought it home.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Yeah.
It's very sweet and generous and loving and just so giving of itself to us.
So that as we're bringing this to a close, if I think of money as having your voice and your energy in this moment, so what do we do for money? Anything?
Yes, that I mentioned that sweet flow of energy. That's like food for money, for the energy of money, that when it feels that kind of sweetness of our fulfillment, that's like makes money go, ooh, it's like makes it really, it doesn't make sense to talk about whether it's happy or not, but the closest word we have for human beings is something like that makes money happy. It's like a beautiful exchange happening then. It doesn't matter if we're grumpy and feeling mean and all those things. It doesn't matter at all. There's absolutely no judgment here whatsoever. But there is no question that there's a reason why we love to feel that kind of sweetness and flow and generosity. There's a signal in that.
Wow. And the signal is?
More of it.
Wow.
You want it. You like it. Have more of it.
Wow. Okay. Well, I look forward to having more of this. And Sarah, thank you for bringing what you have brought so far to our show and the audience and the world with the book and everything you do. And looking forward, like I said, to what you have shared with me about what's coming. So in the meantime, there's a lot here you could learn from Sarah directly. Go to Sarah with an H, SarahMccrum.com, SarahMccrum.com. The book is Love Money, Money Loves You. Her podcast is The Spirit of Business. And there's a money scorecard / app or something. We've got a link to it.
MoneyScorecard.app.
Dot app. Okay. And so, wow, thank you so much. I feel richer already.
Yeah.
I've been enriched for sure.
Richer life. It really is truly richer. Thank you so much, Filippo.
Thank you, Sarah. All the best to you. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, my name is Patrick, and I live in San Diego, California. A few months ago, I was visiting a friend, and a neighbor of hers was moving. She asked me if I needed a couch and love seat as she was selling hers. The woman's apartment was dark, and I glanced at the furniture and loved its style. And even though my gut said no, do not buy this, I said yes and rented a truck to get it from LA to San Diego. Once I got it home, my wife told me she hated it and would not allow it into our home. Upon seeing it in the sunlight, I could see how damaged it was from having been drawn on with crayons and paint. It also had a strong odor coming from it, so I had to agree that we couldn't use it. I had to pay to have it hauled off, and this whole event has been a costly nightmare. I can't let go of how stupid it was for me not to listen to my gut, and can't sleep, and am beating myself up as I can't deal with this horrible mistake. Please help me.
Patrick, years ago, I had many challenges as to how to forgive myself for my less than elegant choices. And one of my spiritual teachers shared the Ho'oponopono prayer with me. It is a Hawaiian practice of reconciliation and forgiveness, and it has helped me so much. In the past, when I offered this as a solution, I left out the full definition and origin of the practice and prayer, and so I'm including that info here. It is beautifully explained at the website ancienthuna.com, and they define the prayer like this. Ho'oponopono means to make right. Essentially, it means to make it right with the ancestors, or to make it right with the people with whom you have relationships. We believe that the original purpose of Ho'oponopono was to correct the wrongs that had occurred in someone's life, including to miss the thing aimed for, or to err, to disobey, and to go overboard, or to do something to excess, which were illusions, and even to do harm, implying to do harm to someone with hate in mind, even if accidental. Patrick, this is just a short introduction to the magnificence of this practice. So I ask you to research and discover more about it, and then begin to use it to set yourself free. I have successfully used the prayer in this way. Dear Dorothy, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me for all of my less than elegant choices. I love you, and I thank you for surviving the story. You might also want to go to the Honest Guys YouTube website and listen to their Ho'oponopono meditation. It's a fabulous way to start your healing and forgiving yourself.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And we'll be right back with our musical guest, Jay Yates, here on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition, right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
We're back. I am Filippo, and I'm excited about our musical segment because our guest is a singer, a songwriter, and boy, has she got stories to share. All the way from Australia, live right now, Jay Yates. Welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Hello, Filippo. Or should I say ciao? Come stai?
Ciao. Sto bene, grazie. Tu?
Molto bene, sì. Bene, grazie.
Now, you know, this is perfect that you started this way, because you and I also had such a wonderful connection, and maybe we'll get in on that in a moment. But I referenced you actually during the conversation with Sarah earlier, when I said later on we're going to be talking in the show about something special that you do that is towards the end, or actually the end of people's lives. Not only do you sing, but you do what now?
Well, I worked in the fuel industry for the last 8 or 9 years, and so I've had plenty of experience in all of the areas of that industry, and working a little bit in the mortuary now and then, you know, where you sort of place that person ready to rest in their clothes, and like you said before, that's all that actually goes with them, and they take those memories, because I think life, as we know, is for the experiences, and everything else comes along with that, you know. Sarah's extremely right with what she's saying, and it was amazing what Dorothy said about the gentleman that was, I have an energy thing with a couch as well, so that was quite amazing. To
a lot of connections here.
I think it's been perfect. It's done for a reason. There are reasons these things happen when they're meant to happen, you know.
You know, it sure has. And this was meant to happen. And I want to give a shout out to Danny Stefanetti, who's been on the show and is friends to us all.
Amazing, wonderful, young, gorgeous, talented woman. Just amazing. And it was wonderful how we met as well. It was meant to be,
Meant to be. So I was talking to Danny, actually. We had a lovely conversation. And at one point I said, you know, Jay says that she's shy. I don't get that. And she said, oh, my God, in her accent, like your accent, lovely. She said she is the furthest thing from shy. And then speaking to you again earlier today, you said something about, I like having other people sing songs that I write, because I don't like the public eye, or I don't need the attention or something. But I'm looking at your Facebook page, and I'm thinking, didn't you even do like a Cher impersonation and Stevie Nicks, Marilyn Monroe, Boy George? I think. Did I see Boy George?
No, that's a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
Andrew, I'm not that good. But no, I kind of fell into that because I was just singing a little bit of background music at a cafe, and then along came an agent and said, you know, you sound a bit like Cher. Would you like to sort of do a little bit of, you know, these floor shows? And I thought, oh, that's kind of putting yourself in the limelight, you know, because when you're in the back of a room and singing background, people are not there to actually watch you. They're there to listen a little bit, but they're there to talk and, you know, they're there for a different reason. But when you're put on stage as a floor show and you're there and you've got to impersonate somebody, dress like them, sound like them and put a full show on, it's very nerve-wracking. It's, like, stressful. I find it very stressful. But once you're up there, of course, you know, it's not about you. It's about sort of entertaining the people, and you just go into this kind of trance sort of thing and you do it, you know. So when you come off stage, you think, well, it wasn't so bad, but they don't look like it changed. I don't look like Cher at all, and I don't, you know, my hair white, you know, I look nothing like her, you know. So I can walk through the crowd and nobody knows that it had been me up on the stage, and I like that. I don't like crowds either. I get very, very nervous if I'm in a big crowd and stuff like that.
Okay. So just another thing. So I wish I could share the audience, much like Sarah, so much of what we talked about, but I'm listening to you. I mean, you had this car accident that changed your life. You've had all these life experiences. And I'm listening to all this, and I thought I heard something like, and my mom sang with the Beatles.
My mum was born outside Liverpool, and Marlene, we call her Mamma Mia, and she used to go and watch the Beatles before they were famous. They were called the Silver Beatles, and I think Pete Best was the drummer at the time. And they were only very young because mum's younger than, John Lennon and all of those, and his, you know, his sister. And, they sort of went to see them, and, you know, actually John Lennon had leaned over and sort of said, shouldn't you be at school? And then my auntie gave them a mouthful, basically. But they didn't know they were going to be famous at the time. You know, they just enjoyed, you know, going to see them and that sort of stuff. So my mum met many film stars and musicians. And, I mean, you know, when she worked at the Sheraton Hotel, I mean, Bob Dylan, he's very elusive. You know, you very rarely do you bump into someone like that. And she came home and she used to tell us all this, oh, I bumped into such and such. Oh, and I met Robin Goulet. He heard me singing in his room, you know, when I was cleaning the room. And it was, you know, I thought, wow, that's just amazing, you know, because my mum liked to have a sing-song and, you know, get on the little tiny microphone with the cassette thing that back then in the 70s, that's what we had, and sing all sorts of songs. So I was brought up around music. My dad liked to have a little sing too, but shower singers. But not mum. She would have been great, I think, on the stage. But she put us first. That's what mums do, don't they, you know?
Well, you have such great – yeah, here's to the moms. You have such great stories. And you have such great songs, and we're going to hear one this morning. And I think, it's evening here. It's early morning there. So as a singer, I have to say kudos to you for agreeing to do a live song. And it, by the way, your voice does not sound like you said it's going to sound like somebody.
It's Rod Stewart, really bad, Rod Stewart, I love, but it's like... In the mornings,
it doesn't
like,
sound like that.
Billy Goat Gruff.
So you've put a special, you've put a song out. The official music video is on our webpage that we created for you. The song is Love is Like the Ocean. And what a beautiful video on a yacht, actually. So interesting, out of the ocean of Perth in Western Australia. And so it's like a Sade type of feel from the 80s. And you decided that to go along with the live version, you would do what for us now?
Well, it's a little bit more laid back. There's not as many instruments in it. And I've got John Calabresi, one of my good friends that I go into the studio with, and he's put a little bit of a jazz twist to it because I do love jazz and, you know, that kind of thing. So, but it was made for more of a Latin feel, but I think this is a little bit, you know, where I drown my vocals in a lot of music. I can't do it now. So excuse me if I croak, but yeah, you want me to start playing and see how we go?
Let's go. Oh. Here is Jay Yates performing live online early in the morning in Australia. Love is like the ocean.
I love your excuse there for me. It's wonderful. Il mare è come l'amore.
Love is like the ocean. It pulls you in, plays your emotions, takes the salty in, the bitter sweetness of your skin is without a care. It's dangerous, the waves are on my fears, so dangerous, but sensual to my ears.
Italian in there.
Yes, I don't know if I said it right.
No, but... you said it right.
Oh, well, you would be the one to tell me that.
You said it right. You know what? You're speaking to hearts. It doesn't matter how you say it, but you said it right. You know what I realize is we don't have a website for you because you don't have a website, but we put on the webpage your Facebook page. Is that okay?
That's perfect. I actually use my Facebook page anyway. I get a lot of work from that, and also with my art page because I do a little bit of art on the side. So it's all good.
Oh, okay. Well, those are services. People are those are good services. The other is a good service too.
But yes, I'm just a bit lazy. I'm terrible. I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to promoting. But when you're an artist, it's really hard to kind of promote yourself. You know, you feel a little bit sort of uneasy about it, you know, because you don't, you know, ego is a really kind of, people can mistake an ego for just wanting to give love and put love out there, and music is all that, you know, but people can take you the wrong way a little. So I shouldn't feel that way, but I tend to feel a little that way. I'm getting a bit better in my older age.
You know, I have a feeling that we're all going to think differently about asking for more money and valuing ourselves after this show. So let's let that sink in a little bit.
I've definitely took that in what Sarah said, for sure.
And know that, yes, and know that money loves you. So that being the case, now we're going to get to hear Give Me Sunshine, is it right?
Yes, Give Me Sunshine. I wrote with a lovely guy called Greg Schultz, who's here in Perth, a beautiful pianist and composer and songwriter. And I sort of have my best friend that lives in LA. She, you know, lives not too far in LA there. And her name is Miriam Colaiuta. And her wonderful husband, they're both fantastic musicians. Miriam, I met after my car accident, like I said to you, another door opened and this woman came into my life, and we've been the most best kindred spirits ever since. I love her to the moon and back. And anyway, she's living in LA now and married to another fantastic musician as well. Vinny Colaiuta is one of the best drummers in the whole world. And he actually has done the drumming on this song for me, Give Me Sunshine, which then when I heard it back, I thought, no, I've got to try and match that drumming with the vocal and everything, you know. But he did an awesome job. So I'm really proud of that. Yeah, wonderful. And Give Me Sunshine's about going back to the 60s and 70s and, you know, where, you know, music we could listen to and we didn't need a video. We could hear everything. Musicians were real, you know. It's about doing a big turnaround. If we could, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Spin into a whole new kind of thing. And so yeah, that's part of what we've been talking about.
From today's music, of course, because there are some wonderful pieces of music and artists out. But it's just that I know what it was like before computer, and I know what it's like with. And I think that's a bit of a privilege. I feel sorry for the really young generations these days that don't know the difference, you know. When you put that record on, you can hear breathing even to the point and, you know, the click of the, you know, the guitar and twang of, you know, the string and a little bit of the on the pedals of a piano, which you don't really hear in the digital side of things, which, you know, is a bit of a shame. But that's another story, isn't it?
Well, one of many that you have, actually, and look forward to connecting with more stories and more songs. In the meantime, here is a pre-recorded version of Give Me Sunshine by Jay Yates, our musical guest.
Thank you.
Take your troubles and your cares away. I'm gonna take you down memory lane. I got a story that I wanna share. When every summer was the hottest year, vinyl records and an old TV. The radio would play the newest beat. Everybody had a different sound. So la 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 la, give me sunshine. To the rhythm of yesterday. Make it to the square. Live bands playing everywhere. Queuing up for the newest craze. Let me tell you, those were the days. Jazz, classical, and rock and roll. A little more time to save your soul. You should be jamming to the reggae beat. So la 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 la. So
Thank you, Jay Yates, for bringing sunshine to the show. Jay, by the way, is J-A-Y-E, and Yates, Y-A-T-E-S, find her on Facebook at Jay Yates. What a pleasure to have you on the show, Jay, and great to connect with you.
Thank you, Filippo. And you know what? When I've got to get that book about the dog, you know, that changed your life, because animals have changed my life big time as well. I've got rescue animals here and all sorts. It's like a zoo. So when that was mentioned, I thought, you know, besides Sarah's book about money, I've got to get your book as well about how the dog changed your life, because that sounds right up my alley, if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean, and thank you for mentioning that. Gosh, you've had so many things change your life. A couch and a car accident and a dog, an animal. So we'll have to talk more another time. Jay Yates, thank you so much for being our musical guest. And another big thank you to our guest, Sarah McCrum. That is our show. And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.